See everybody here. I had unique situation last Sunday of people accusing me of quitting too early, and so that usually doesn't happen. But like Rex said, it was a cliffhanger, and we saw in the last few chapters how Joseph has come in contact with his brothers. His brothers do not know that, and Joseph last week we saw that he put his brothers in prison. And he set them up and, putting the cup in Benjamin's sack. And so the idea there was that perhaps he thought that they would abandon Benjamin like they abandoned him. But they did not do that. That's not what happened. And, you know, all the brothers are there now. And Judah pleads for the life of Benjamin. And so that's where we left off last week. And as we see in our reading this morning in Genesis chapter 45, Joseph cannot hide his emotions any longer from his brothers. Chapter 45, verse 1 says, "Then Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him. He cried, 'Make everyone go out from me.' So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers, and he wept aloud so that the Egyptians heard it and the household of Pharaoh heard it. And Joseph said to his brothers, 'I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?' But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence." And so Joseph's revelation of himself to his brothers came as quite a surprise to his brothers, because his brothers would have probably thought he was dead or didn't know what had become of him. And reading between the lines here, it doesn't seem like they're real happy to see that he's there. But they certainly, you could say that they are in shock. And we see here in verse 3, Joseph asked if his father is still alive, but his brothers couldn't answer him because it says that they were dismayed at his presence. Some versions say they were terrified. And you can imagine the color coming out of their faces as here is this brother that they sold into slavery. Why did they sell him into slavery? Because they hated him. And now the one that they hated and sold into slavery now has power over them. And you recall that they were not... Too much previously, they were bowing down to him just like Joseph's dream said that they would. So here are these 11 men in the house of the second most powerful man in Egypt. And so what is Joseph going to do? What is Joseph going to say? And of course, you know what he's going to say, but this doesn't really play out the way that sometimes we think that it would. And sometimes when things happen like this, if you're watching a miniseries or you're watching a television show and there's someone that's evil, and then the tables are turned and they're about to get their comeuppance, and you just can't wait to see that happen, because the person that they persecuted or the things that they manipulated to have their way are now coming apart. And so we really like that sometimes when we see that in these types of narratives when they're fictional. But we see that Joseph is the second most powerful man in Egypt, and he could do anything that he wanted to his brothers at this point, and certainly they would know that. And what would you do if it were you? These are my brothers who ripped me away from my family. They ripped me away from my home. They caused me to miss out on some pivotal years of my youth. And I've been enslaved in Egypt in various ways for 13 years. And some of that time, a lot of that time, was in a dungeon. They caused misery for me. What will you say now that you have the power to say whatever it is that you want to say? Will you make them live in fear? Will you wield your power and your strength over them? And so we know what Joseph says, and what Joseph says is surprising to his brothers, I would believe. Because obviously they're in fear. How's my dad? You know, I'm Joseph. How is my father? And they're like the deer caught in the headlights. They're standing there terrified, not knowing what to say. So Joseph says it for them, starting in verse 4. So Joseph said to his brothers, "Come near to me, please." And they came near. And he said, "I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and yet there are 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you, for you a remnant on earth, and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me. You and your children's children, your flocks, your herds, and all that you have. And I will provide for you, for there are yet 5 years of famine to come, so that you and your household and all that you have do not come to poverty. And now your eyes see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see, that it is my mouth that speaks to you. You must tell my father of all my honor in Egypt and of all that you have seen. Hurry and bring my father down here.' Then he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept. And Benjamin wept upon his neck, and he kissed all his brothers and wept upon them. So, and then his brothers talked with him." Hard to even read that without weeping yourself. But we see here that twice Joseph tells his brothers, "You sold me into Egypt." You know, that's something that certainly is on Joseph's mind. And they obviously have that on their mind too, because they have already expressed that among themselves, as Joseph has overheard them talking about it in the past incidents in the last few chapters. And so Joseph knew that they sold him into Egypt, and you can imagine the fear that the brothers would have as they approach Joseph, and Joseph, come near to me. But what Joseph says here is really one of the most dramatic passages that we see in the Scriptures, because he says, "Do not be distressed and don't be angry with yourselves." You know, don't beat yourself up anymore about this. And you have to go back. Did I really read that? Is that really what that said? Joseph said, "Don't be angry." You know, Joseph of all people should be angry, but he tells them not to be angry and not to be distressed about what it is that they've done. If this were a television show or a movie, this would be the time that Joseph would say, "I hope that your guilt swallows you whole and eats you alive until the day that you die." And that's going to be pretty soon. Joseph doesn't do that. He offers words of peace. Don't be angry with yourselves. Don't be distressed about what you did. So how can he do that? What allows Joseph to have this kind of response? Or a response that we might say is unnatural or uncommon. And the answer is in the sovereignty of God. Joseph says in verse 5, "God sent me before you to preserve life." So the reason that they are not to be distressed is, Joseph says, this wasn't really you. This is God. And in verse 7 says, "God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors." And so verse 8 also, he says it again. "So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over the land of Egypt." So you see, Joseph is repeating himself here, saying that it was God, it was God, it was God. And so how does Joseph have this kind of godly response? Of course, he is seeing the sovereignty of God in his life. He recognizes that God is over all the affairs of the earth. And he sees that God is working here. And there's nothing that you recall that we've read so far in the life of Joseph that suggests that God came to Joseph and told Joseph, "Now, here's what I'm doing. I want you to be patient, because you know I'm working all this out." We don't have any indication that Joseph has been told directly that this is all going to work out. He doesn't get this information while he's in prison. You know, be patient while you're here. Or he doesn't even get it when he's out of prison. But what Joseph can see here is that God is working in the world, in the affairs of men and in the lives of people, and he's active. It's also interesting here that we see that God is using the wickedness of people to fulfill his plans, and that's not the only time that we have seen that, is it? We certainly see that in the life of Christ, that there are wicked people that took the life of Christ, and that all worked out according to God's plan. And so it's not unusual for us to see that God is working to fulfill his plan. And so sometimes people may wonder, well, why is it that God uses wicked people to fulfill his plans? Maybe that's the only kind of people he can find. Now, we're all sinful. And there's not any sinless people that God is going to find to work his plan. And so for 22 years, Joseph has been completely in the dark concerning what is being accomplished here. But he's picked up on it, hasn't he? In the things that he's telling his brothers, God did this. God put me in this position. I'm here for a reason. God is preserving a remnant. And clearly Joseph knows something about the plans that God has for the offspring of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so we see that Joseph knows that God is working. And so this is something that we can certainly see when we look at chapter 46, as we'll look at in a few minutes. But in chapter 46, what do we see? We see that Joseph sends for Jacob. It says in chapter 46, verse 1, "So Israel took his journey and all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. And God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, 'Jacob, Jacob.' And he said, 'Here I am.' Then he said, 'I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will make you a great nation. I myself will go down with you to Egypt and also bring you up again, and Joseph's hand shall close your eyes.'" Jacob and the rest of the family moving to Egypt. Can you imagine that? I mean, they're moving out of the land that's been promised to them, but they have to do it because there's not any food where they are. The famine was going to be severe for another 5 years. Jacob is living in this land that's been promised to Abraham. That's why it's called the land of promise. And Abraham leaving that, Jacob leaving that land, that was the land that Abraham went to because God told him to go there. But what does God say to Jacob? He says, "Jacob, Jacob, I'm God. It's okay. It's okay for you to go. God is going to be with them. God is going to, I'm going to go with you to Egypt and I'm going to bring you back." Jacob is already living where he wants to live. But God says, "I'm God, and I want you to do this." And God doesn't explain how all of that is going to happen and all the mystery that could be revealed. He just says, "I'm God." And that's enough, isn't it? I'm God, and this is according to my plan. When I was in college, and went to work for Disney, which I wanted to do. They have what they call it Disney University, which is a two-week training program before you actually go into whatever your role is going to be. And one of the things that they did in that training was they brought in a Disney artist that taught everybody how to draw Mickey Mouse. And so how am I going to do that? Well, we were told that we were going to do that, and so the animator had us draw some circles on a piece of paper and some lines, and you know, for the first few marks, I couldn't tell how is this going to be Mickey Mouse. And so nobody raised their hand and said, this isn't right. This isn't going to be Mickey Mouse. You don't know what you're doing. Nobody objected to what the animator was telling them to do, but you know, it really didn't make a whole lot of sense. But some of the things that they made us draw with one pencil were just guidelines for some other things we were going to draw with a darker pencil. And so they were making you draw some things into quadrants so everything would be the right proportions. And it was really interesting what they did. I didn't know where it was going or how it was going to work out, but when, hey, look what we got. We got Mickey Mouse. Mickey Mouse emerged from the paper, but it was all part of a plan that somebody smarter than the rest of us knew was going to work out. And when we see what's going on in the life of Joseph knows God. Jacob knows God. God says to Jacob, I'm God. Here's what I want you to do. It's going to be okay for you to go to Egypt. I'm going to work. That may not be where you want to go right now, but it's where you need to go. And so God doesn't explain what every line and every circle means, but he says, I'm God. God doesn't really have to explain himself. So it's not Jacob's or Joseph's place to challenge God, but to believe that all these things are going to work out. And another thing that's interesting about what we've read so far in the book of Genesis, have you noticed that absolutely no miracles were performed, yet God is at work? There's a lot of people today that think, well, God's going to do something magnificent. God's got to perform some kind of miracle. He's got to give us some kind of sign for us to see that he's at work. And when you look at the New Testament and you see the purpose of miraculous gifts and spiritual gifts in the Scriptures and how those stopped after the period of the apostles confirming the Scripture, just because we don't see those kind of miracles anymore does not mean that God is not at work. God is busy in the affairs of the earth to bring about his purposes. And when we look at the life of Joseph, you don't see miracle after miracle being performed, but you see event after event working out in the way that God would have it to work. And Joseph ends up being exactly where it is that he needs to be at the right time, doing what it is that God would have him to do. And Joseph tells his brothers, It wasn't you that sent me here, it was God. And so what a sigh of relief the brothers must have had when they heard Joseph explain that several times and tell him it was God, it was God. And the reunion here is a joyous one. God's in control. You can trust him. He's going to fulfill his promises. So you recognize the things and the events in Joseph's life. But Joseph also realizes something else, that he is in a position to save his family. And that's another thing that you don't see God whispering into Joseph's ear, hey, you know, you're here to save the family. He recognizes that. He just looks at his circumstances and he realizes that he's in a position to serve the Lord, and that he is going to be able to preserve the children of Jacob as a remnant and keep them alive. He's been put in a position to act, and he's going to use it. Let's look at verses 9 through 13 again. Verses 9 through 13 of chapter 45. "Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, you shall be near me, you and your children and your children's children, your flocks, your herds, and all that you have. There will I provide for you, and there are yet 5 years of famine to come, so that you and your household and all that you have do not come to poverty. And now your eyes see, and the eyes of your brother Benjamin see, that is my mouth that speaks to you. You must tell my father of all my honor in Egypt and all that you have seen. Hurry and bring my father down here.'" And so Joseph tells his brothers, "You've got to bring Jacob here, and here's why. You know, there's still going to be 5 years of famine, and you know, you need to survive." And so we see that Joseph recognizes that he has been put in this position and has this opportunity, and he uses it. As we've mentioned several times during this series, you know, Joseph is not always in the position that he would like to be in. Things are not always convenient for him. But we don't see his attitude of being one that is going to demand of God what it is that he wants and what position he wants to be in. He finds himself in the position that he's in, and he's using what he has to the glory of God. And he recognizes, I'm here for a reason, and these circumstances that I'm in can be used to glorify God and protect my family and take care of my family. And certainly he could have looked at his own power and wealth and been conceited about that. And you know, he could have just told his family, it's good to see you guys, and be warm and be filled, and thought, well, that's fair retribution for everything that I've suffered. And he might have thought even, I spared their life and sent them on their way, and they got better than they deserved. And he could certainly be, living it up, as we would say, and have no regard for the plans of God. And certainly being in Egypt, there are probably plenty of people around him doing that very thing, because they were the ones that had the resources, the money, and could take advantage of that. But Joseph didn't have any of those bad attitudes that certainly could have come about with the situation he was in. He could have executed revenge on his brothers. He could have done nothing godly with this position that he's in, and attributed his own power to the situation that he's in. I got here because I was a good guy. I got here because I used wisdom in the way that I dealt with people, and attributed his success to himself. But he didn't do that. Listen to verse 8 again. "God has made me a father to Pharaoh, and Lord of all his house, and ruler over all the land of Egypt." He's not taking credit for his position. And he says it again in verse 9, that when he says, "Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me Lord of all Egypt." God has put me in this position. It's not me. And so it was not his brilliant plan that he was going to save Egypt from all this famine. He says it was God. And Joseph is continuing here to think about this in terms of what he's going to do for God. And certainly in the things that he says here, he's aware of the covenantal promises that were made to Abraham. So Joseph describes here how he can spare his family, how he can spare them from the famine. And he sees, I have a role to play in this. I have a purpose here. And it's sad when you see how many people look for meaning and purpose in their lives, and they fall way short of seeing that God has a purpose for them. The purpose is not to make more money or to become more powerful, and certainly not to question God. Joseph finds purpose in his life from God. And that's really the answer for all of us, isn't it? That we find purpose in our life because of God. And that's the meaning of the parable of the talents that Jesus, you know, told, that three different individuals were given different amounts of money, and a talent was a measure of money. And so the point of the parable is what are you going to do with what God has given you? And of course, the five talent man and the two talent man, they went out and got more. The one talent man went out and buried what he had, and he was displeasing because he didn't use what he had to do anything for his master. That's the point of the parable. And there's no indication in that parable that the five-talent man and the two-talent man were very prideful about what it is that they were able to do with what had been given to them by their master. And I'm just amazed here with Joseph and the mistreatment that he suffered and the great success that he's had here of late, that he could have taken great pride in and held this over his brothers. But what do we see as we look at his life? Every lesson that he's in the pit, what's he doing when he's in the pit? Well, he's relying on God. What is he doing when he's tempted by Potiphar's wife? He's relying on God. And God is with him every step of the way. When he's ruler over Egypt, he's relying on God, and God is with him. He's using what God has done with him in whatever situation that he is in. What has God put me here for? And he sees that God has put me here to protect my family. God has put me here to protect the remnant. And God has told Jacob, you go ahead and go. You go ahead and go to Egypt. And so it's a great, great lesson for us. In chapter 46, it says, Israel took his journey with all he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifice to God, his father Isaac. God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here I am. Then he said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will make you into a great nation. I myself will go with you down to Egypt and will bring you up again, and Joseph's hand shall close your eyes. Then Jacob went out from Beersheba. The sons of Israel carried Jacob, their father, their little ones, and their wives in the wagons that Pharaoh had sent to carry them. They also took their livestock and their goods, which they had gained in the land of Canaan, and came into Egypt. Jacob and all his offspring with him, his sons and his sons with him, his daughters and his sons' daughters, and all his offspring, all his offspring he brought with them into Egypt. And it goes on and it talks about the descendants of Jacob that are traveling with him. And next week we're going to get into chapters 47 and 48 and look at the sweet reunion that happens when Jacob and his family have moved down to Egypt. And so not as much of a cliffhanger as we had last week, but certainly something to look forward to as well. And what God says to Jacob is so comforting, that you're going to be reunited with your son, and you're going to die, and Joseph is going to be there to close your eyes. It's a very touching moment, and we'll see next week, you know, Jacob's sweet reunion with his son, Joseph. And so this is a happy ending to this story that there was a lot of turmoil, and it could have turned out a different way if Joseph had not been the man that he was. So there's a lot of good lessons for us in this section of Scripture. Hope this will be useful to you and helpful to you as you try to be that kind of a person for God as well. To use the situation that you're in. Use whatever blessings it is that you have that God has given you and use those to God's glory in whatever way that you can, just as Joseph did. We can help you in any way to be obedient to the gospel. We invite you to come while we stand and sing.